You're listening to All Over the Shop, my journey through the English language.
So they've taken the English language, but they've looked at some of it and they thought, no, I think we need a little bit more explanation.
Yeah, you guys made it so that people don't understand it. That's stupid. That's not smart. We made it better.
In a form of gobbledygook, of stentorian, sesquipedalian sentences that nobody can ever understand.
Well, there's going to be a good wee bit of schnoise.
N-I-C-E, noise.
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 Feel awful because they're speaking English, but I could not understand a single word. It was like
the common one that you get stick over is the do be, they do be, he does be, and so on.
Good luck over there, but whatever you do, don't forget your accent, all right?
Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of All Over the Shop. I'm your host, Barbara Feeney. Yes, here again in my bedroom in lockdown. This week, we are going to get knee-deep in ketchup and tomato sauce and tea sauce. We'll get to that. I have some mind-blowing revelations for you. So I hope you're hungry because you're coming with me into the press or the pantry or the larder or the food cupboard, whatever you call it. So get out your knife and fork, because today, it's the language of your tummy. I want to first to bring you some listener wisdom. The 00 issue is real. It gets people going. And you know, we might laugh at people who say book or kook, but it's still around. So in Ireland, I get the sense that it's older people. But there is a place where there is universal use of the pronunciation. And that place is Sunderland. So my Sunderland listener, yeah, that's right, my Sunderland listener, she's actually from South Shields though. So she has given me some very useful inside information. So she said that book is one of the main words that Geordies take the piss out of Macums for. Let's just hear it in action. Because this is Holly Matthews, she's a former star of Biker Grove, she's an actor, explaining the subtle differences in the pronunciation of book, or should I say book.
We would say book for what you read, a book, how you'd say it. A book in Geordie, or a book would be kind of book, it's kind of softer, it's slightly different in Sunderland, so you've got to read.
Listen, from that example, I'm going to say, I'm not sure that Geordies can take the piss out of the Macums. Their pronunciation of book sounds pretty like book to me. But I love local rivalry. It's alive and well. So I'll just let you know I have ordered the Macum Dictionary online. So this isn't the last you've heard about the canny Sunderland dialect. We're all going to be learning how to speak in Geordie and in Macum. So the 00 issue actually also led me to this wonderful poem. And it seems that the ooh sound is not our only problem. English is a wild, wild creature. So my San Francisco listener shared this poem with me. Just take a moment, sit back and listen to this. The title of the poem is Cork and Work and Card and Ward. And the author is anonymous, apparently. I take it you already know of tough and bow and cough and dough. Others may stumble, but not you, on hiccup, thorough, laugh, and through. I write in case you wish, perhaps, to learn of less familiar traps. Beware of heard, a dreadful word, that looks like beard and sounds like bird. And dead, it's said like bed, not bead. For goodness sake, don't call it deed. Watch out for meat, and great, and threat. They rhyme with sweet, and straight, and debt. A moth is not a moth in mother, nor both in bother, broth in brother. And here is not a match for there, nor deer for bear, or fear for pear. There's dose and rose, there's also lose. Just look them up, and goose and shoes, and cork and work, and card and ward, and font and front, and word and sword. And do and go, and thwart and cart. Come, come, I've barely made a start. A dreadful language, man alive, I'd mastered it when I was 5. Now, I encourage you to go look up the poem and just read it yourself with your own eyes, because I think you need to see the words written down to just realise how mental English is. And that's not the only poem, actually. There's loads more that illustrate the absurdities of the English language. So if you're short of an activity at the weekend, Google them and just discover how difficult it must be for people to learn English as a foreign language. God help them. I also had a York listener get in touch to say that my remarks about the English accent are unfair. You know, he said that I was referring very generally to the English accent. And I agree with him. That is not fair, because as we have just heard, there are so many variations of accents in England. So from now on, I will refer to specific accents, not just one term for them all. Thank you to my York listener for trying to bring justice to his people. And one last bit of feedback. I was very pleased to hear that gunners is used by other people as a term for their underwear. Protect your arsenal, wear your gunners. When I started thinking about this topic, and I mean, I started thinking about this topic in relation to the English language many years ago, and it's always intrigued me. I know some of us think about strange things, but I've gathered words in my brain. I have a little drawer and I just open it up and I gather them. So I have a few stories. I have lots of stories, actually. Lots of personal language battles and struggles that I want to share with you before we talk about the issues that exist. The words, the misunderstandings, a bit of history, just a general appreciation for the range of words that exist for the same food items. I'm sure many of you use self-checkouts in the supermarket. I never really know why I use them, because there always tends to be an issue. Anyway, I had a rude awakening in Melbourne a couple of months ago when I attempted to scan a number of items, but they didn't appear on the screen. And I mean, I know you can search through the pictures, but that's often a bit slow. So I usually try, if there's no barcode on something, usually a fruit or vegetable, I type in the name of the fruit or vegetable. So this particular day was actually one of my first days in Melbourne. I was in Woolies and I spent a couple of minutes grappling with the screen, looking for a pepper. I had the pepper in my hand. It was a red pepper, very standard. And when I typed it in, a chili pepper came up. I was like, this isn't a chili pepper. This is just an ordinary pepper, you know? And then I remembered. It dawned on me that the Aussies, they call them capsicums. And then, you know, I learned it was grand. Okay, next thing, went to search for my favourite vegetable, the courgette. I remembered, like the Americans, they call them zucchinis. Again, I encountered issues with vegetables in the US. As I've talked about before, my field hockey team in California, we did a for Thanksgiving, a couple of days before Thanksgiving, because obviously all the Americans went home, we did something called a potluck, another wonderful American word and activity, where you all come together and everyone brings food. We probably just call it something different here. So I had a rude awakening. So we were each given something to make, and in true Irish fashion, I volunteered to make roast potatoes. One of the girls was assigned to make something called candied yams. I'd never met a yam. I didn't know about a yam. I probably should have. Turns out they are a sweet potato, or maybe kind of a close cousin of a sweet potato. So that was fine. But then, you know, I got to the actual dinner. I didn't know what candied yams were. And all of the dishes, the various dishes, were laid out on a table in the centre, a buffet style. And I saw this dish that had marshmallows all over the top that had been melted. So, I mean, this isn't a culinary podcast and it's not my place to critique these famous dishes. All I'm going to say is that I had a huge amount of anxiety trying to build up a barrier in the middle of the plate so the turkey and the gravy did not touch the marshmallow. Now, my final story about a linguistic battle with food is again in the US. And don't, you know, don't feel if you're an American listener that I'm kind of pointing the finger at you. This was just a story I had. You know, I love America. So I was in a diner. I was with my brothers and we were ordering our breakfast. And whatever I was eating, it contained eggs. And I wanted some fried eggs. So I said, yeah, I'll have some fried eggs, thanks. And the waitress, lovely waitress, she said, you want them over easy or sunny side up? To which I replied, yes. Now, in my defense, I was quite young. My brothers thought it was hilarious. I'd never heard of over easy. I suppose we'd just say a flipped over fried egg. Anything food related is a big issue and worth exploring because people can be left confused and bereft when they order the wrong thing, if they're misinterpreted. You know, I mean, if you ask for a biscuit in America, you will likely be given something that resembles a scone. Let's not even get started on the way Australians just casually call all sweets lollies. I can't even go there. There's no better place to start than with the humble chip, because I feel they're a universally loved food around the world. They've infiltrated most cultures. I mean, if I met someone who didn't like chips, I'd be nervous. So let's begin with some research. Always good to start with some facts. So I did one of my very scientific surveys on Instagram. For this vote, I had 357 participants. What I did is I put up a picture of what I would call chips. And I asked my followers, were they called chips or French fries? The results were as follows. 87% of people said they were called chips. Now, I had a look through these voters and they were almost entirely Irish and English voters. 311 people. 13% of people said they were called fries. 46 people, that is. This was mostly a mix of Americans, it was a Japanese, Portuguese, Canadian, Australian, a few Irish, which I found a bit troubling. But I did get some messages telling me that it depends on the size of the chip, how crispy it is, where it's from. Obviously not very black and white. It's a little bit more nuanced. So we're going to explore it, okay? But before we go any further, I want to take a moment to understand the words. And then we can attribute blame or judgment to the people who call them whichever word, okay? And see who's right, okay? So the French fry may not actually be French at all. So some claim fries originated in Belgium, where there was villagers along the river Meuse, who traditionally ate fried fish. But in winter, when the river was frozen, they didn't have fish, so they fried potatoes. And then apparently, during the First World War, American soldiers in Belgium ate them, liked them. And since the dominant language in southern Belgium is French, they called them French fries. There are other stories. Some people say that they were sold by street vendors in Paris in the 1780s. They think that maybe Thomas Jefferson is credited with introducing French fry to America because he was living over in Paris at that time. So chips, when I was looking at the history of potato chips online, a lot of the articles were related to what I would call crisps, an issue that we will delve into in a couple of minutes. But the definition of chips in the dictionary is a long rectangular piece of deep fried potato. And this is what I'm taking from it, which presumably derives from the action of chipping, to cut or break a small piece from hard material. Wonderful, wonderful. You know, we cut and break the small pieces from the larger potato. If we look at the explanations for both of these words, they both make great sense. I get it, but I'm wedded to chips, so I'm not letting go. But it's not as simple. This is a very nuanced area. We need to look a bit deeper, okay? Because the world of potatoes is quite complex. So we all know in America, they say French fries for chips. And then they say chips and they mean crisps. So despite living in the US for a year, I still made this mistake on a number of occasions, serve crisps with like a sandwich or a burger. But we need to go down to the Southern Hemisphere Things are just far less straightforward there. So in Australia and New Zealand, they use chips for both. For both. But you have to be precise when you're ordering. So if you were in a pub, you would say you want hot chips for chips. And if you just want crisps, you just need to say chips. Then we go to South Africa and they often use the term slop chips. So although I am told by my South African source that these are a particular type of chip, vinegar soaked, they sound amazing. My favourite word for chips has to be from my friends in India, where the term finger chips is readily found on menus. So when I was travelling around India, you would get the menu and in like sides, you'd have finger chips, which I just love because it's such a brilliant description. I mean, it's pieces of potato, essentially in the shape of a finger. Thank you, India. So simple, so unique. I'm going to keep the theme quite tight today. Because this is such a diverse topic, I'm actually going to have to come back to food. There's so much to talk about. So now I want to talk about chips' best friend, ketchup. Personally, I prefer chips with mayonnaise, but this isn't about me, so we won't get into that. I keep amazing myself at things I find out. And I had my mind kind of blown this week because I thought, for the most part, people said ketchup, but they don't. First, let me briefly mention my research because, as I always say, we need some facts. So I did another survey on Instagram. I posted a photo of Heinz tomato ketchup and I asked my followers whether they would call this ketchup or red sauce. 283 people responded and the results were as follows. 94% of people, which is 267, said it was called ketchup. Well, 6%, 16 people, said it was called red sauce. I did have a number of people slide into my DMs and tell me it's actually called tomato sauce or, alarmingly, tea sauce. Who knew? So 94% of people said ketchup, but it was a very mixed response group. All but one of the voters in the red sauce category were from outside of Dublin. They're all Irish. What I would say is a city slicker, they're all from rural Ireland, okay? I would associate traditionally red sauce with Irish College. Don't give out to me, that's just my notions in my head from going to the Gaeltacht. So ketchup has quite a complicated history. You know, I would always just typically associate it with America and Heinz. But apparently it came from Vietnam via China. The name is linked back to a Chinese word, which I'm not going to try and pronounce because I know I'll butcher it. But it refers to a sauce derived from fermented fish. And it's believed that traders brought fish sauce from Vietnam to southeastern China. And then the British likely encountered ketchup in Southeast Asia and then came home and tried to replicate this sauce. But that ketchup was not the ketchup we know today, because the British recipes had things like mushrooms, walnuts, oysters and anchovies in them to try and reproduce that savoury taste. Apparently, tomatoes only came into the mix in 1812. Listen, I can't go on, but if you want to read more about it, the National Geographic have a fascinating article about the history of ketchup. The term ketchup is widely used in the US and Canada and Ireland. Although I know there are some outliers, the red sauce brigade. You know, I respect that though. No messing about, it's red sauce. That's what it is. Now, let's return to our friends in the Southern Hemisphere. They call chips and crisps chips. So they like to shake things up and they call ketchup tomato sauce. Or in true Aussie abbreviation, tea sauce. Tea sauce. That's gas. That's really gas. So typically, if you visit a supermarket in Australia or New Zealand, you will only find bottles of tomato sauce. Ketchup isn't really there. Controversy actually arose from a Heinz ad in Australia. I won't explain it, I'll just let you hear it.
You know, I'm often asked, what is the difference between Heinz tomato ketchup and tomato sauce. Well, let me show you. Surprisingly, not many people know that Heinz tomato ketchup is packed full of tomatoes, which makes it thick. And when it comes to making food taste great, thicker is tastier. Mmm. Upgrade to Heinz tomato ketchup, because thicker is tastier.
So apparently Heinz has spent decades trying to sell Australians ketchup, not tomato sauce. And they don't like this because the term is typically associated with America. And, you know, a lot of people are defensive about like Americanisms infiltrating their language, which is understandable. We love America, but people like to keep their traditions. And I get it. One of the articles I read, it was from the Daily Mail, and they said that this is brilliant. So Heinz have always been making huge efforts to sell to the Australian public ketchup. But the Australians have at times seen this as something of an affront on Australian identity, especially with that campaign that you've just heard. It seems so complicated, this ketchup tomato sauce business. I'm not a culinary scientist, so I don't want to get too deep into it. But if you have some thoughts or some more information that you can help me understand, I'd love to do a taste test. If anyone wants to send me from Australia some tomato sauce and some ketchup, and we can try and get to the bottom of this. I know this is kind of deviating from the podcast itself, but I think it's a really pressing matter. Anyway, we need to go to New Zealand because apparently you're not a real Kiwi unless you eat something called Woody's, their version of ketchup.
You can shout your cousin's lunch, but just make sure they bring a plate. You can watch the one-day cricket. You can scream until you're hoarse, but you'll never be a Kiwi till you love that Woody's sauce. You can burn a snarl of black, white through, slap it on some bread.
You can just to complicate things a bit further, my New Zealand listener is telling me that he would refer to New Zealand made products as tea sauce, but American products or ones intended to taste American style as ketchup. My mind has been blown by ketchup and tomato sauce this week. There's probably other ways of saying it and I don't even know. Oh, amazing. I had a really hard time with this podcast trying to choose the food items that we would talk about. So I stuck with the most popular ones. We're going to come back maybe, you know, a couple of times. It's such a diverse topic and issue, isn't it? But I do, before we close out our discussion about the theme, I do need to mention another complex affair. And that is sausages. Everyone loves a sausage. I came across some really interesting names. If you're feeling a bit meh, look up sausages in the dictionary. It'll give you a laugh. Because there's like the formal meaning and then the informal meaning. I'll say no more. So I was alerted to something peculiar. Again, I know you're going to be like, you're obsessed with the Southern Hemisphere. Would you just leave the Australians and the Kiwis alone? But they've just got some great, great stuff for us. They have something, these things that look like Frankfurters, but they're mini Frankfurters and they've got loads of different names for them. And again, I don't know everything. I'm not from Australia. I'm not from New Zealand. So I could be saying this wrong. I'm just hearing things. People are telling me things. I'm doing a bit of research. So if I'm wrong, get in touch. I'll correct myself. So they call these mini Frankfurters Cheerios. So my Irish listener who lives in New Zealand said she was so confused because the Kiwis would be talking about Cheerios and she thought they were it was cereal. But no, they're these miniature saveloys, another crazy word for a sausage, which we'll get onto in a minute. Essentially, they're miniature Frankfurters. But they also sometimes call them cocktail sausages. That's not right. In Ireland, we know what a cocktail sausage is, okay? And it's certainly not a Frankfurter. A couple of the other names, Baby Sev, a Footy Frank, or a Little Boy. Mental. And apparently, in New Zealand, the butcher would often give free Cheerios to children if they were in the butchers with their parents buying meat. I've already mentioned saveloys, but they're mad on this word in parts of England. My Sunderland listener, who's from South Shields, when I first met her 10 years ago, she would tell me about saveloys. and something called peas pudding. And I was just amazed. Saveloys are something that you'd buy in a chip shop in parts of England. We also know that the Brits love calling sausages bangers. We'd use that too. I feel in Ireland would probably be more, I'd like saying sausies, you know, sausies and chips. Sausages, sausies, cocktail sausages. I'm not really sure what other terms we use. And in the US, we know they love hot dogs. To be convey a huge stereotype, we know Americans love hot dogs. It's like saying, oh, Irish people love potatoes. Sorry, that's not fair. I'm not saying you all love hot dogs. But a word that's often used in America for a sausage is a wiener. Or as the dictionary tells me, a variation of that is a weenie. And that obviously comes from German, Wiener. And if you're a very cultural person, you might say Wurst, which is a German or Austrian sausage. And if you look up the definition of that in the dictionary, it says a rod-shaped portion of seasoned ground meat in a casing. In South Africa, they use this term. I'm not going to pronounce it because I will butcher it.
Hey, my name is Ben Kruger. Welcome to my kitchen. Today, we're going to make that great South African delicacy, boerewors.
Listen, that's probably enough sausages for one podcast. You heard it. It is time for Word of the Podcast. Today, I will have two words because something came up. I had thought of a word and then I read something in the news and I said, listen, I'm going to have two this week. The first word is not something that you would find in the dictionary, but it's quite a common thing that happens, but I'm not sure that everyone knows this word, so I want to introduce you to it. And that word is fork. It's a portmanteau, a mixture of fart and walk. So I think many of you be familiar with, you know, that time you were in the supermarket and you were, you know, walking down the aisle, picking your things, and then you would see someone scurry past you at speed. And a few seconds later, you would catch that lingering stench of fart. They were forking. They were fart walking. They knew they had to fart. So they walked at speed to try and waft the odour around so they didn't have to stand in it and make it apparent that they had farted. So that is called fart walking. You can see sometimes people in clothes shops as well. They kind of look a bit guilty and then they walk and then you smell it and there's no one else around. So I had to introduce it to you because it's a phenomenon that we all know very well, but sometimes you don't have the language to associate with that action. So there you go. My second word of the day comes from this week. Collins Dictionary came out to name its word of 2020. And I don't want to talk about the word of 2020 because it's associated with the pandemic and we're trying to escape from the pandemic in this podcast. But one of the words they highlighted this year, because they talk about new words that have entered the dictionary and kind of popular words. And one of them was mukbang, M-U-K-B-A-N-G. It originated in South Korea and describes a host who broadcast videos of themselves eating a large quantity of food. God, isn't that just brilliant? It's kind of like got a bit of onomatopoeia in there, doesn't it? Mukbang. Fork and mukbang. This week's words of the podcast. I like to weave the theme throughout the podcast. So for this week's pronunciation peeve, I have two culinary words. The first, it's a cheese. It's a cheese we like to put on pasta or pasta. That word, I would pronounce it as Parmesan. But I know we have some North American friends that would probably say Parmesan. So is it Parmesan or Parmesan? The second pronunciation peeve is something very Irish, but I'm interested to know if this pronunciation exists anywhere else. And I also just like to share pronunciations that we have. Now, I don't say it, but I really like it. So that pronunciation is ham. But there are people in Ireland who say hang. And if they're referring to a ham sandwich, they say hang sandwich. And it's just a much nicer way of saying it. There's kind of a certain ring to it, hang sandwich. It's not ham sandwich, which is just so dull. So does anyone else say that? Like last week, we discovered that book, it's not unique to Ireland. Our friends, the Mackems, they say book too. And that is all we have time for today. It has been a packed episode of sandwiches and chips and tomato sauce and tea sauce and wieners and weenies. So thank you for sticking with me and listening. But most importantly, please get in touch. Babs Feeney on Instagram, Barbara L. Feeney on Twitter. I want to hear about your stories, your linguistic battles with the English language. It's an important issue. We need to highlight it. And I'm here for you. Until next week. Goodbye.